So 3 and 5 and Jeremy or something.
That's over there.
Okay, the time has come. It's 3 o'clock. Tape going? Are we good to go? All right. All right, I will call this meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division to order. It's Monday, January 14th, and I want to welcome everyone. I'm Scott Dibble, State Senator from Senate District 61, Southwest and part of downtown Minneapolis, and this is our first meeting of the 2013-2014 legislative session, and hopefully it'll be informative and blessedly brief. We're going to be meeting on Mondays and Wednesdays from 3 o'clock, and our committee meeting goes until 5:30. However, there's nothing magic about being here all the way through to 5:30. I'm sure when we really start processing a lot of bills and a lot of work, we'll be taking up all that time. But it's a late afternoon, so it's kind of up to the committee how long we stay. We'll use up all of our time if need be, but I just wanted to emphasize there's nothing super magic about staying here all the way to 5:30. I thought we would start with some introductions of the committee. I just wanted to call members' attention to the committee packet. There's a couple of things that you might want to glance at. We have a document titled Committee Procedures, which, they're not really rules. They're just friendly suggestions. Just take a quick look at those. They're pretty straightforward. They're kind of decorum and procedure and process. We're going to try very, very hard to start on time, 3 o'clock. Asking folks maybe to let us know ahead of time if you're going to be absent. The appropriate decorum, that's the very senatorial thing of, a lot of these, and I would encourage, are these available to the public as well? Sure. Yeah, we'll make copies available to kind of our regular visitors, the decorum, the demonstrations, the cheering, all of that stuff. Just some suggestions, handouts, hearing requests. A couple of just quick suggestions for members who are new to the Senate. These microphones are on all the time, and they actually are very, very sensitive. So when you're chatting, particularly if you're gossiping, you might want to just take it a little bit away from the microphone, because I guarantee you it'll pick up and it'll be recorded. The cell phones and things, if you start hearing static and feedback, oftentimes that's attributable to cell phones. I have my cell phone here right now, and it's on, but sometimes it starts picking up the static and feedback, and so you either might want to move your cell phone further back or turn it off or that sort of thing. It's okay to have pop and stuff at the table, but try not to eat at the table. We have these area back in the back. The other thing I just wanted to mention to members, something that it's a little more difficult in this meeting room, but in other meeting rooms it's a little less obvious because our chairs are accessible to the public. Please try not to have conversations with the public, and this is also as much to the public. We have a committee page who can bring a note to you, and if you need to have a conversation with a member of the public, just don't have it at the table while we're meeting. Have it off in the wings or outside of the committee room itself. I'm not strict on, doing your mail or, your laptop and stuff. Just try not to disrupt the proceedings and try to at least pretend to be paying attention if you're trying to multitask. So those are just some suggestions. If you have anything you'd like to add or anything that we are overstepping our bounds on, I did make a copy available to our Republican lead. Just let me know, and we can proceed with that. So I had promised in my memo of greetings to you that we'd have a calendar of overviews. We didn't actually get to that. And then I had a second thought, which is this next document. It might be interesting to hear from all of you as members what you'd like overviews on, whether they're agency overviews or issue overviews or anything you'd like to have a little more information. So think about that in the next few days. fill this out if something does strike you as is interesting that you'd like to receive a committee overview on. That's what we're going to spend the first few weeks doing. It is my goal as a chair for everyone in the committee to be as well informed and have as much capacity and knowledge about transportation and public safety issues as is possible. That's the model of chairmanship that I want to abide by. There's a different model, which is, you know, the chair gets to control all the information and, you know, let little nibbles of information out once in a while. I'm about expanding the family and expanding the base of knowledge and our ability to really deal with transportation and public safety policy issues and craft some real good ideas together. So let me know what you want to hear about. If there's something I haven't thought of in terms of the overviews that we're going to be having over the next couple of weeks, I'd love to hear more about that.
Good. Just raise your hand.
So we'd like to start with some introductions. I think we first want to introduce our staff. We have, to my left, the committee administrator, who has been my very able legislative assistant for a number of years now, so we're excited to promote him to committee administrator, Michael Gordon. And newly on board, we have Ted York, who's my new legislative administrator. Michael and Ted are very friendly, very accessible. Please do not hesitate to call upon either of them if you need anything. They're the folks who are going to be putting together our hearings and duplicating our handouts and making sure that our agendas are all in order. So get to know these guys and work very closely with them as we proceed. We have Bonnie Berezovsky, who has been the able fiscal and legislative and
Senate Council
analyst for many years now for transportation, and Krista Boyd, who is our fiscal and legislative analyst as well. Do you guys want to say hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I told them I wouldn't. And we have Chris Turner back here, who's going to be our public safety analyst. Is Ken with us? Okay, so Ken Backus is joining us, who will be our Senate counsel on the public safety side as well. Back at the tables, we have, let's see, where are my notes? We have our committee page, Chris Voller. Step forward so people recognize him. So you want to be getting his attention if you need to pass notes or need anything done. He'll be doing a lot of running and a lot of helping us out. Craig Sunday, who's a Republican staff. And we have Charlie Bruce, who's our DFL staff and is okay, I think that's all we have. All right, so that's our staff. Welcome, everyone. I thought what we would start is we would go around the table and introduce ourselves, our name, where we're from. But here's the special twist.
Oh, jeez.
Tell us a little story about transportation, either an experience or a reflection on transportation in your life or something about transportation that's important to you. We'll confine it to transportation. Maybe, you know, as we get into public safety stuff, if folks want to reflect upon their experience and stories with public safety issues. But just tell us a little bit about either a transportation anecdote or something that you're focused on and working on in your world. So we'll start on my left with Senator Osmick.
Hi, I'm Senator Dave Osmick. I represent the constituents of Senate District 33, which is the west side of Hennepin County. I reside in the city of Mound with my wife and two daughters. And I'm a freshman. I'm freshest of freshmen. I have no previous legislative experience. My story is actually very recent. I went to a Southwest Transit Authority meeting, and they indicated they were having an issue with, they wanted to use the shoulders on 494 between Highway 5 and 494, and they couldn't understand why MnDOT wouldn't allow them to use it. So the next day I went in to see Senator Dibble and his staff, and they gave me a couple of names, and a couple days later I had them in my office, and they're going to be talking with MnDOT, and looks like they're going to allow Southwest Transit to use those during rush hour traffic. So even though it was just my first week, I think I may have actually accomplished something.
Nice and done.
Power and joy of being on a powerful Senate committee. All right.
Senator Melissa Franzen, I represent District 49, which includes all of Edina, West Bloomington, Northeast Eden Prairie, and Southeast Minnetonka. I work at Target downtown. I live in Edina with my husband, and I take public transportation to work. So I do take the bus express through 394 to downtown Minneapolis and really enjoy that. So it's full of professionals in the morning, and I enjoy the transportation benefit of not having to park downtown. My husband also is on the transportation committee in Edina, so we're both really big advocates about transportation and having options like the Southwest Light Rail that we hopefully will have in our district or benefiting our state. So those are issues that are important to me, and I'm happy to be here.
Senator Vicki Jensen, I represent Senate District 24, which is the counties of Steele, Rice, Waseca, Dodge County. For me, people that have met me so far, my number one issue actually deals with the Southwest corridor that they're trying to get done, which people know it as Highway 14. But for me, it's a complete corridor that we started back in the 1960s and needs to be completed. However, we can figure out how to make that happen. But when you're talking to me, that is an issue that is near and dear to me, and I do believe that it helps the entire state of Minnesota. So.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon. I'm Jeremy Miller from Senate District 28. I live in Winona and represent Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties. My wife and I recently had our first son, Drew. He's 11 months old. And again, we live in Winona. The issues that are important to me are rural transit, roads and bridges. We have a large bridge project going on. I think overall, we probably won't see it in the committee much, but I will be keeping a close eye on it, the interstate bridge between Winona and Wisconsin. So those are the issues that I'll be focusing on, and I'm happy to be here.
Hi, everyone. Roger Reinert. I represent Duluth. This is my fifth year involved in transportation between the House and the Senate. We have virtually every form of transportation in Duluth, from port to freeway to cargo rail to two different airports. Rural transit, as Senator Miller mentioned. Transportation story, flood 2012.
But you just had a big airport.
We did. We had a terminal open over the weekend. So much needed, brought us into compliance with TSA and a variety of other things. But really, the flood of 2012 and what it did to our transportation infrastructure really dominated the year.
I'm Mary Kiffmeyer, and I represent Senate District 30, which is both Sherburne and Wright counties. And I am married to Ralph, also a former legislator. And I have four children, and we have 14 grandchildren. And several of them are older teens who are driving, so I have a very great transportation interest. As a matter of fact, the other night we had our 16-year-old grandson drive Grandma and Grandpa home because he needed the driving experience, so did a great job. Kind of fun to see those kids grow up. Transportation is important to my Senate district. I have an interregional corridor, both Highway 10 and Interstate 94, that run through two parts of my district, plus 169, 25. Just a lot of highway issues, and probably the biggest thing is most any of you probably drive them as well, and getting through there is becoming more and more of a hassle, and so people spending time on the road, spending money on gas, frustration, those kinds of things, it's really important to just get them through. It saves money, saves time, saves hassle. And so they're also crucial to the business interests and the tourism. So not necessarily to Duluth, but to many of the other up north areas. So that's probably the biggest issues. And I think in general for us in our area, the roads are the primary concern of my constituents.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Senator Jim Carlson, and I represent the areas of northern and eastern Burnsville and most of Eagan. And I was reelected in 2012 after serving 4 years from 2007 to 2011, and I'm back. I was on the Transportation Committee from 2007 to 2011, and there's a lot of things that I think we left undone. Probably the more serious issue that we had back then, of course, was the bridge falling down. But I think what I want to have is a little more upbeat here, so I'll tell my transportation story is to make a little bit of fun and to praise one of my constituents, who is Kevin Gutnick from MnDOT. Kevin is usually the person that speaks when the news people want somebody to speak for MnDOT. And so I'm going to speak for Kevin Gutnick. He lives in my district. And we formerly had a very rough transition between the asphalt and concrete in Eagan. And I'm a real strong advocate for smooth rides. And so I used to complain about that to people. And about a year and a half ago, the MnDOT put a new lift onto 35E north of Lone Oak Road and came down to that transition. And now it's as smooth as glass. And so I told Kevin that every time I drive over that, I'm going to think about him because I'm going to credit him for that really smooth transition. The Association of Civil Engineers said that in the United States we have some level of damage that is caused by rough roads each year, and it roughly costs each of our people who have automobiles $275 a year average damage to your car from rough roads. And I'm hoping that we can look at that and see if we can make them not only safe but also smooth.
Good afternoon. My name is John Peterson. I'm the state senator from St. Cloud. I also represent the cities of Waite Park and St. Augusta, as well as two townships in central Minnesota, Minden and Haven Township. So we have a very strong metropolitan area, clearly in St. Cloud, but then my district gets very rural very quickly with the townships as well. Like other communities in Minnesota, I have every form of transit and transportation in my district as well, including the number one and two corridors in the state, which is I-94 and Highway 10, and congestion is clearly a problem there that is, again, beginning to get federal and national attention, which is going to be important to us here in Minnesota as well. I'm looking forward to serving in this capacity.
Okay. Welcome. I'll go last. So I'll go with our vice chair.
Good afternoon. I'm Susan Kent. I represent District 53, which is Woodbury, the southern parts of Maplewood and Oakdale, and Landfall. Yeah. And if you're keeping your map in your head, that means we are tightly connected to 494, 694, and 94. So the interstate system is certainly a big deal in our district. I live very close to all three of those. In terms of a transit story, one thing that I think I have that sets me a little bit apart is that I've spent a fair amount of my life outside of Minnesota. I had the opportunity to live in a number of cities that, for which mass transit really is a critical part of how they live their lives. As a kid in New Orleans at the other end of the river, and I've seen the Mississippi River from all directions, I had the luxury of taking streetcars to go meet my friends on a Saturday and have a day of shopping, and we didn't have to drive, and it was a nice thing for our families to know that we could have a little independence and be a little safe. And I've seen people of all industries and walks of life embrace transit for a really peaceful way to get to work and very successfully. So I've had that perspective, and I'm glad to bring it here. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Senja from Rochester. I've been in the Senate now 10 years representing north half of Rochester, northern and western Olmsted County, and about 14,000 people in Dodge County. From our perspective, at least in our neck of the woods, so to speak, the crying angel is Highway 14. In terms of completion, there's about 20 or so miles between Dodge Center and Owatonna that remain, and there's just a lot of energy, a lot of conversation, and a lot of interest in getting that final stretch completed, both from the standpoint of safety and commerce. So that's important to me. Being from Rochester, obviously, Air traffic is important from the standpoint of both commercial flights and private flights. Mayo Clinic, 34,000 people, biggest private business in Minnesota, really depends on strong air connections to serve the patients and visitors that come every day, more than a million a year, actually. And so that's terribly important. And then longer range, as you look at our community and Mayo and those interests, the idea at some point of high-speed rail connecting Rochester with Chicago and the Twin City area is something that is well discussed and certainly a longer-term objective of our area.
Thank you. David Thomasoni, I'm from Chisholm. My Senate district is Senate District Number 6. It takes up almost half of St. Louis County and about another half of Itasca County. I've been in the legislature. I'm starting my 21st year counting my House service, and this is my first time on the Transportation Committee. I've been driving between the Twin Cities and the Iron Range long enough to see highways get ruined, get fixed, and get ruined again. And so things happen quickly in this state. I put about 30,000 miles a year on my car, and so I see a lot of highways. We actually had light rail transit on the Iron Range long before it was even fashionable. We had a trolley between Hibbing and Gilbert from 1912 to 1922, and then it was driving over some mines, and so it had to be moved. My former representative, Representative Rukavina, would tell you, well, like dirt roads because you can't put lines down the middle of dirt roads and you can't get picked up for going over the center line. but having said that, I do like when they're smooth. And my story is a pretty good one, actually. There was right outside of Chisholm, there's about a mile-long stretch of highway that was just fixed, and it was about a $7.7 million project. And it had everything to do with the mining industry and the mine subsidence. And underneath this four-lane highway are a bunch of underground mines. And there's about six tiers of underground mines, and they were caving in, and they called it mine subsidence. And so they had to figure out a way to fix this road so that it wouldn't cave in while cars were driving over it. And they actually came up with something they called a land bridge. And they had an enormous amount of rebar that they built into the concrete, and it was about a 12-inch thick concrete. And they actually had a batch plant right on the site where they were, so they could have a continuous pour. And they made a continuous pour of 1 mile over this enormous amount of rebar. And they're hoping that in the event that the mines do actually cave in underneath it, that the highway won't cave in. And so it was a pretty interesting project to see it happen right in front of our eyes.
Good afternoon. I'm Senator Ann Rest, and my home is in New Hope, and I've been on the committee since I was first elected to the Senate in 2000. And my interests are pretty widely based with regard to transportation locally. I'm very interested in moving the Bottineau Boulevard LRT project along. We're still pretty much in the beginning aspects of that, but I'm hoping that it will come after the Southwest Corridor, so I'm really interested in getting that Southwest Corridor done very fast so that we can turn our attention to Bottineau Boulevard. In the past, I've been the author of the MnPass legislation. Also was the author of the efforts to secure the federal dollars for bus rapid transit along the Cedar Avenue corridor, which now is going full bore, so I'm real happy about that. I care very much about preserving the airports fund and modernizing the way in which we collect dollars from the airline industry to support the airports fund, and we'll be seeing once again a bill to do that this session. Also have served on some of the railroad initiatives, looking at expanding the the connections between our state and other Midwest locations, Chicago in particular. Very interested in setting up barriers, which we have done, and we hope to continue to work on that with Senator Osmet, along making sure along 494 and 169 that the cable barriers are there, that cut down the fatalities of crossover head-on collisions. I think that's been very successful, and also in the metropolitan area, continuing support for the sound barriers where local communities are interested in having them along to combat local noise in the neighborhoods in our communities, and a number of other things. But I think that's kind of the gist of it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bobby Joe Champion. I represent North Minneapolis, Bryn Mawr, half of downtown, and the North Loop. And so it's a very diverse district, and I enjoy representing the district extremely. I've served on the Transportation Committee in the House for two terms. I live in Minneapolis with my wife, Angela, who's a doctor of pharmacy, so she travels a lot because she floats, and she likes driving and going into various communities. And we have two children who both attend public school in Golden Valley. Some of the transportation issues that are important to me globally, if I just had to capture it all, is I want to make sure that there's a comprehensive transportation system in the city of Minneapolis where all of our citizens and others are served well. So that's bus service. I think it's so important that people from our district are able to get to the outer ring suburbs for employment opportunities or for appointments, whatever the need is. I feel deeply and strongly about Botno and Southwest Corridor, the interchange, and just a number of regional transportation issues that would help move us forward. When we think in terms of economic development, we know one of the main issues that the Chamber and other businesses talk about centers around having a competitive transportation system, because that is something that they use in order to attract, you know, high-level clients as well as individuals to relocate here. But when we think in terms of not just these systems being in place or construction, but when we think about employment opportunities and contracting opportunities, I feel very strongly about inclusion of women and people of color and veterans when we think in terms of the diversity, not just around who works there, but how do we diversify those revenue streams so that people's quality of life is improved.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Pratt, and I'm the newly elected senator from Scott County. I represent Shakopee, Prior Lake, Jordan, and six townships. I've never been involved in transportation, but I'll share my story, and maybe that'll give you a sense of what my priorities are. When we moved to Minnesota many, many, many years ago, everybody asked us why we were moving to Prior Lake and south of the river. My gosh, we might have well as moved to Iowa. We moved here in December, and that next spring we found out very, very quickly when the bridge to Chaska, the bridge from Shakopee, and the bridge, the old Bloomington Ferry Bridge, all three flooded, and I had to hear my dad complain about getting to work in downtown Minneapolis. Back in the day, there was very little transit coming out of Scott County, and so, you know, driving was the only way to get around. Now, the river still continues to be an issue. We want to make sure that not only that our residents can get across to work, but people can get to work, and everybody here can enjoy all the assets of Scott County, which would include Valley Fair, Canterbury Park, and Mystic Lake. So come on down, cross the river very, very safely in the spring, and we'll welcome you down to Scott County.
Yes, so Senator Wieger is at a press conference, so we'll jump over him, make him update us about his personal transportation story when he gets back. We'll interrupt your presentation. Krista. To let Chuck Wigger give his story. Senator Westrom.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tory Westrom. I'm from Elba Lake, Minnesota, western Minnesota, Grant County, a very rural county that I takes eight counties to make up my Senate district. And so just give you an idea of the population and the sparsity. Served in the House for 16 years and served on the Transportation Committee there. Mr. Chairman, I can't remember if you were in the Transportation Committee in the House or not, but it seems like about half the committee members have come from the House, so I remember serving with many of you guys.
I was indeed, Senator.
And so my story, in just kind of an interesting story, highlights the rural nature of western Minnesota and my district. Years ago, a constituent came down to testify in front of a committee, and Grant County doesn't have any stoplights, so that's a notoriety or a trivia pursuit question for those of you interested. And so he got up to the table, I suppose a little nervous, but his explanation of Grant County to everybody was, we're the county without any stop signs. And so everybody quickly wondered what we do out there. But we do have stop signs, but no stoplights. My district starts west of St. Cloud, Albany. Up I-94 would be a eastern reference point, and it goes all the way to the Dakota, North and South Dakota border, north of Breckenridge, down south of Ortonville. So it's a very rural district, about 4,800 square miles, 126 townships. Unlike you, Representative Peterson, with two townships, my district is very rural. Of course, we've got a diverse interstate and two-lane highway, and some of the safety improvements that have been made with the shoulder striping and Norwegian washboards, we call them out there. One issue, Mr. Chairman, we think the roads in many places are suffice for letting us move a little faster, so an increase in the speed limit in some of our areas would be a nice plus for people trying to commute and do commerce in rural areas. So a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit might be something we should consider. Thank you. Good to be on the committee.
Thank you. And like I said earlier, I'll tell my little story. I actually didn't think of a story, but I gave everyone else an assignment, and then I didn't do it myself. but just by way of a little bit of background, I did serve in the House 2001-2002. I served on the Transportation Committee there and came to the Senate and been on the Transportation Committee the entire time I've been in the Senate since then. Actually, by way of background, some of my early work as a community advocate, as a political activist, et cetera, was working on transportation issues and really trying to spark a larger conversation in the metropolitan area around building the kinds of transportation systems that have a positive and net positive impact on people's lives and making sure that we're building transportation in a way that makes communities work for everyone. So it's been an abiding interest and passion of mine. I'll save my speeches about transportation for another time, but I really, by way of summary, I really believe strongly that transportation touches on so many other things that we do in our lives and in our community, as a state, in this capital, that it really is in service to many of the other committees, many of the other initiatives that we're working on, and it's appropriately viewed in that light. My story, I just moved to the Uptown area about 2 years ago, and previous to that, I lived a little further south in my Senate district. And, you know, living in Minneapolis proper, you have pretty good access to bus lines and the like. But even so, living where I do now, my ability to get around in a variety of ways, depending on what's happening with any particular day, has been so much enhanced. That's been a real joy and kind of a revelation for me. Just about a block away from the 29th Street corridor, which is a major east-west route that connects all the way out to the far western suburbs and all the way across the middle southern part of Minneapolis, is a bike corridor. And if any of you haven't had a chance to really see that or experience that facility, it's amazing. It is a bike highway. So it's not just bicycle as recreation, but it's really a major transportation corridor for bicycles. And I can actually take my bike and get across town much faster through that, because that's a trench that used to be dedicated to railway to serve some of the industrial uses along that corridor that are now obsolete. Now it's been converted to bicycle use. And I have the Uptown Transit Hub nearby, where many different bus lines converge. At some point in the not-too-distant future, about a half mile to my west, the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Transit will be coming up from the southwest suburbs. That'll connect up through downtown, where there will be access to the Hiawatha Corridor and the Central Corridor. And I share a car. I don't have a exclusive use of a car. I live with my brother, and we share a car. And even though I'm really, really busy, I'm a senator, I'm running around all the time, all over the place, my transportation needs are really fully met by that array of different types of modes that I have access to, which has been fantastic. I graduated from Apple Valley High School, and we just had a meeting with the suburban transit providers this morning, and Will Branning was there, who was my mayor in Apple Valley way back then. And I'll just never forget what it felt like when, you know, I got to 16 and I got my driver's license, had a job, and all the activities that teenagers do. I was in sports and youth group and all this stuff. And this that feeling, if I didn't have a car, and I didn't own a car, I was, you know, a kid, I didn't have money, and my folks didn't have enough money to buy me a car, that total feeling of being stranded, unless you're able to hop on your bike and get to where you needed to go or walk. But if you need to get much farther than you could reach on a bike or on foot, you're pretty much stranded. And I hope we don't really subject folks based on age or income or ability, physical ability, to that feeling of being stranded, that we work hard and really building those communities that work for everyone. So that's my transportation story. We'll get into some public safety discussion sometime else. You don't necessarily have to share stories, but as we work through issues and receive overviews, if folks want to relate what we're working on to their lives or what they're working on, we'll do that at that time. So we're going to take a little bit of time now just to receive an overview from Krista Boyd. Just kind of this is a finance committee, so it's a kind of financial overview. And then at a near-term meeting, we'll have the agencies come in and give overview on the agencies and the services they provide. But today we're going to follow the money. So Krista Boyd and Chris Turner will give us a little bit about where the money comes from and how we spend it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just take a second to get set up here.
So, Ms. Boyd, while you're getting set up, what is your preference, to have folks interrupt you with questions as you go along, or get through the presentation and take questions later? It's up to you.
Mr. Chair, I'll do whatever senators feel most comfortable with. If you want to interrupt me with questions as they come to mind, I have no problem with that.
All right. Why don't we do that? So members, get my attention if you need to let Ms. Boyd pause and clarify something.
All right. Just for the record, my name is Krista Boyd. I'm with the Nonpartisan Senate Office of Council Research and Fiscal Analysis, and I'm the Fiscal Analyst for Transportation. Let's see. So, Chris Turner will be joining me a little later. This year we've picked up some other pieces of the Department of Public Safety in our budget area. He'll be going over some of those. So just a overview at the start. Our primary funding areas in the transportation area of our budget are all of MnDOT, Department of Transportation, and this is different programs including multimodal systems, which are basically everything but roads, air, transit, freight, and rail, the state road system, which is the biggest piece, of MnDOT, the local roads, which are state aids, county state aids, and municipal state aids, and general support and services, just administration, things like that under the department. Then Metropolitan Council, we have the transportation piece under Metropolitan Council, which of course is mostly Metro Transit, bus, light rail, and commuter rail. And then contracted transit programs, which are Metro Mobility, the Dial-A-Ride service, suburban transit providers, what you'll also hear called opt-outs, and other contracted programs within that council. And then the transportation planning piece is Met Council is a designated MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, federally designated for the region. So they are sort of required to do quite a bit of planning for the entire region's transportation programs. The Department of Public Safety, right here I only have listed the transportation-related pieces for right now, and those are State Patrol, Driver and Vehicle Services, Traffic Safety, Pipeline Safety, and Administration of the Department. So this is just to give you a little scope of what our budget looks like under transportation. These are the, this is a breakdown of the appropriations in transportation for the current biennium, 12 and 13. And as you can see, the bulk of it is from the Trunk Highway Fund, and that is the main fund that funds the state road construction program in the state at $2.8 billion. And then the next highest is the county state aid. These are appropriations from funds. So this is from the county state aid fund, would be $1.1 billion for the biennium. Federal revenues, the bulk of which are for state road construction, is around $1 billion for the biennium. Transit assistance, which is mostly motor vehicle sales tax revenues. I'll get to that later. Municipal state aid, again, through MnDOT, is about $300 million. The general fund is a tiny piece of our budget, only about $126 million for the biennium. And I'll break that down on the next slide. And then special revenue. Special revenue is, you know, obviously a catch-all. So it catches things like driver and vehicle services and DPS, a lot of which are fee-based. Those flow through the special revenue fund. Again, I'll talk about that more later. So this is our general fund breakdown. Obviously, the bulk of our budget is through dedicated fees and user taxes. So our general fund piece is relatively small. As you can see, we receive less than 0.4% of state general fund in the 12 and 13 biennium. And of the $126 million of that biennium from the general fund, the bulk of that was from Metro Transit, a direct appropriation. That was 62% of the general fund was from Metro Transit. And next we have $30 million in that biennium for Greater Minnesota Transit run through MnDOT. Public Safety receives a small general fund appropriation. And MnDOT Other, that's things like passenger rail is the bulk of that, actually. They get about $1 million per biennium for passenger rail.
So, members, I'll just note the general fund piece is our blessing and our curse. So most of our budget is kind of carried, quote, offline. We're not that exposed to the general fund, which sometimes is a good thing because, you know, we kind of can do our thing and provide services that we're tasked with providing. On the other hand, it also means that sometimes we don't get noticed as much. So it's a blessing and a curse. Sometimes, we appreciate the fact that we're not exposed to the volatility and all the give and take of the debate around the general fund and its uses. On the other hand, sometimes when, you know, we need some attention from all of our colleagues, we're like, yeah, just go take care of your transportation stuff. And, you know, we're over here fighting about education and health care. So sometimes it's like, watch what you wish for.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move into a pretty high-level just breakdown of how the revenue sources flow into and out of our main transportation fund. Now, this is for roads and bridges specifically. This is the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund kind of scheme. It's our main fund for roads and bridges in the state. In fiscal year 2012 specifically, it was about $1.8 billion large. And the three main sources of revenue are listed at the top.
So, Ms. Boyd, this is a one-year, right, not a biennial?
This is a one-year snapshot, yeah, fiscal year 12. Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about in the scope of the revenues, the gas tax brought in about $847 million. That's its largest revenue source. Registration tax, vehicle registration tax, $580 million. And motor vehicle sales tax, $335 million. And it's worth noting that this is just a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax. 60% of total revenues of MVES go to highway user tax, and the other 40 go to our transit programs. So the 335 is just 60% of the total revenues. Also some miscellaneous revenue, obviously, investment, income, fines, et cetera. It's a small piece. And then the outflow is along the bottom. Now, I should mention, as we're talking about this, that the three main revenue sources are all constitutionally dedicated to the Highway User Tax Fund, and the outflow along the bottom is constitutionally required as well. The Trunk Highway Fund is the largest piece, 58.9%, and it gets about it got about $1 billion in fiscal year 12, just as a pass through. County state aid, 27.55%. Municipal state aid, 8.55%. And then there's a 5% off the top, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. But in the Constitution, it's designated that 5% off the top can be dictated by the legislature to go to any one of these three funds. Let's see. So the dedicated transportation revenues, I'll go through piece by piece, and if there's any questions about any of those, I'll go through. The top three are what I noted on the last slide, the gas tax, the tab fees, and MVEST, and those, as I mentioned, are all constitutionally dedicated. The motor vehicle lease sales tax I just finally added to the slide after doing this presentation for a number of years. It's a statutory dedication, which I should be clear to point out. It's not mentioned in constitutional user fees, but it has been in play for a number of years for transportation funds, and it's a statutory dedication at this point. So I'm going to go through these one by one. Okay, so gas tax revenues, as I'll say again and again, it's a constitutional requirement that every penny of the gas tax is deposited in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and may be spent only for highway purposes. That language is from the Constitution. The current rate is 25 cents per gallon as a base rate, but we also have a 3.5 cent surcharge, which is dedicated to paying down trunk highway debt service. That was just fully phased in this year. It started at 0.5 cents per gallon in 08. So now it's considered sort of a floater surcharge, and it will float until a certain percentage of the debt service is paid down for a number of years in the future. The last increase was in 2008, and I'll probably refer to this bill a number of times, and most of you know what I'm talking about. Chapter 152 was passed in 2008, which increased the gas tax, changed the vehicle registration tax schedule, and implemented the statutory distribution of MVEST in that bill. So that was the last increase in 2008 from 20 to 25 cents. The previous increase was 20 years prior from 17 to 20 cents. And I just listed the current federal tax for you if you want it as a reference, 18.4 cents per gallon. And as I noted earlier, in fiscal year 12, the gas tax collected approximately $847 million, which we like to talk about per penny of tax, and just divide that by the current rate, and that's about, oh, that was in fiscal year 12, yes. So that's 30.8 mil per penny of tax. Tab fees is the next highest revenue source to the Highway User Fund, and again, constitutionally dedicated every penny to the Highway User Tax Fund and spent only for highway purposes. So the tax itself is $10, and then on top of that is added the base value cost according to a depreciation schedule. That depreciation schedule was changed in 08, which led to a sharp increase in revenues in that year and a couple years after. Vehicles 11 years and older are off the depreciation schedule and pay a $35 minimum rate. And in fiscal year 12, the tax raised approximately $580 million. So sales tax, motor vehicle sales tax, a little more complicated, obviously, because we can't just say 100% gets dumped in. But until fiscal year 2002, 100% of the MFEST revenues did go to the general fund and were just for general purposes. But in 2001, 2002, there used to be caps on registration tax that was levied, and the caps were, or the caps were put on in 2001 to make up for some of the lost revenue to registration tax. Highway user tax began receiving a percentage of MFEST revenues to try to make up for that, so it became its third revenue source in fiscal year 2002. And then in fiscal year 2003, transit funds started picking up a piece of these revenues since the legislature eliminated the use of local property taxes for transit operations. So, again, MVEST was used to sort of backfill that loss of revenue from that. So in 2006, so these were statutory dedications to both highway user fund and transit operations. In 2006, a constitutional amendment passed which required that 100% of these revenues from motor vehicle sales tax be dedicated to transportation and phased in. So it wasn't a big hit to the general fund, but start to be phased out of the general fund. So fiscal year 2012, the last fiscal year, is when we saw the fully realized 100% of MVEST going to highway user tax and transit. And I have the statutory allocation down 60% to highway user, 36 to Metro Transit, and 4 to Greater Minnesota. Now, as I mentioned, this is a constitutional dedication, but the language is open a little bit in the Constitution where it says no more than 60% of the allocation can go to highway user and no less than 40% to transit. And I hope I'm saying that correctly. I am. So beyond that, it's up to the legislature how to set those percentages. The legislature set them at 60-40, and that's where they remain. So in fiscal year 2012, it raised approximately $559 million. And for once, I don't have to split out what part of that goes to transportation because now it all goes to those transportation funds. So this is our newest piece, motor vehicle lease sales tax. This is not constitutionally dedicated, as I mentioned. It's a statutory dedication. It's gone through a number of interesting changes over the last couple of years. It used to be just collected as a general sales tax and deposited in the general fund, no dedication of the revenue. But in Chapter 152, the legislature passed a phased-in dedication of leasing sales tax to highways and transit funds. All the revenue is still collected as general sales tax and deposited in the general fund, first off, so then it is transferred to the transportation funds. Through a number of different machinations, which I'll go into if you ask, but I don't want to bog down now. As it stands now in statute, $32 million annually is withheld off the top of the revenues and kept in the general fund. And of the remainder attributable to leasing, it's split 50-50 between Greater Minnesota Transit programs and 50% to metro counties except for Ramsey and Hennepin. So 5 metro counties split the remainder of it. After the legislation was passed in 2008, we faced a bit of a recession, and leasing did not perform the way it was expected to when these funds were dedicated in legislation. So the first year that was expected, we didn't see any distribution of the funds to transportation because it simply just didn't collect enough after the amount withheld in the general fund. And then the next year it was projected to distribute about $800,000, and suddenly we had much more than that, and now it's producing about $5 million a year to each of the funds. So above the $32 million, there's about that's changing. Last year it was about $5 million per fund, so $10 million total after the $32 million, and the projections are that it's increasing sort of more rapidly than was expected a year ago. And you can see in fiscal year 12, fiscal year 11, the funds collected about $5 million each. Fiscal year 12, they're going to collect about $9 million each, that $18.6 million to the transportation fund, split 50-50. These next couple slides are just to give you kind of a picture of what the revenues look like in terms of magnitude. This is going way back to 1992 to the last completed fiscal year. And just a couple things to note, you can see around 2000-2001 where MVEST, and I lost my T, but MVEST is coming into the highway user tax fund. And the vehicle registration revenues go sharply down as some caps were put on what could be collected and those registration taxes, and Invest filled the hole somewhat. And then you can see again in 2008, that's the year that Chapter 152 passed, and there was a sharp increase in gas tax revenues due to the increase in rate, the registration tax due to the increase in, that's not as sharp, but you can see it phased in over as the vehicles weren't got on the new depreciation schedule. And then MVEST, as that statutory phase-in started in 2008 out to 2012, you can see the piece of the pie growing just a little bit there. And this one is just it's a truncated version just from 08 out to the end of the next biennium to kind of show how the revenue sources are performing. You can see that gas tax is pretty flat over the last several years and continue to be flat. And, in fact, over the next biennium, it's projected that there will be a 1% decrease in the revenues as compared to the previous biennium. And vehicle registration, again, pretty flat, still a slight increase as we go out, but relatively flat. MVEST is still increasing at this point, and the projections look fairly favorable, I think, maybe as the recession ends and the industry bounces back. But, again, it's hard to say.
Ms. Boyd, these numbers aren't controlled for inflation. These are nominal dollars.
These are not controlled for inflation, right?
Thanks.
Okay, so we talked about the sources to the fund. And if you're still awake, I'm going to talk about the spending from the funds. The highway user tax is the main fund, and I'm going to go through several of the others that we'll deal with in our budget and where we appropriate from. I should mention the first four here are road funds, and then I'll segue into some non-road talk at the end. So the first is the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, which I already went over to some degree. It's a constitutionally created fund. Its sources are constitutionally mandated from gas tax, vehicle registration tax, and MVEST. And then its distribution is also constitutionally mandated. It has two distributions. One is I'll skip to the bottom, the 95% distribution. If you look at the Constitution language, you'll see these numbers 62, 29, 9. Those are the three main road funds, and that's their distribution from the Highway Trunk Distribution Fund. But 5% is set aside or taken off the top and is allowed to be distributed back by the legislature to any one of these funds for various purposes. That can be changed only once every 6 years and was in the 2008 legislation. We've had some talk over when exactly that's open for, reopen for discussion, what specific year, but around 2014, I think, if there's any interest, this distribution would be able to be changed. So currently, in statute, the 5% distribution is as follows. 30.5% of that goes to town roads, the town road account, and is given back to counties for those purposes, 16% to town bridges, and then 53.5% to this flexible highway account. Now, that account is left open to the discretion of the Commissioner of Transportation, how that can be spent in several limited ways. Right now, for this biennium, it's spent all on turnbacks, county and municipal turnbacks, to sort of refurbish them in anticipation of turning them back. The Trunk Highway Fund. So, I won't skip back. So, Trunk Highway Fund is one of those three main funds right under the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is the fund that funds all of our state road construction and maintenance, so it is a pretty big fund. It receives 62% of the allowable distribution in the Constitution. And in fiscal year 2012, what that meant was $1.5 billion in revenue, $1.1 billion from the Highway User Tax flow-through, and the bulk of the rest is from federal aid, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And just to give you an idea, the revenue is flowed through from the highway user tax statutorily, but then what we do with the Trunk Highway Fund is up to the legislature through direct appropriation. And so this was the breakdown in 2012. 86% went to MnDOT for construction and maintenance activities, as you'd expect, the vast majority of it. 9% to the Department of Public Safety because State Patrol is funded by the Trunk Highway Fund. And 5% was allocated for debt service out of the Trunk Highway Fund bonding. So the next two are just an overview of the state aid funds for counties and municipalities. This is my least favorite slide of the whole presentation because I have to explain this. Okay. The County State Aid Highway Fund is a little complicated, mostly because of Chapter 152. Per the Constitution, it gets 29% of the 95% distribution. That equals 27.5% of the total highway user tax revenues. Now, the statutory formula for distribution, once it's in the fund, to the state's 87 counties is listed here. 10% goes out equally to each county. 10% goes out based on the proportional share of vehicle registrations per county, 30% based on the proportional share of CASAL lane miles, and 50% is based on their county share of 25-year construction needs, which is a very complicated and time-consuming process done by MnDOT and their Office of State Aid with a very, very large spreadsheet that I've seen and been scared by. But in Chapter 152, another piece was put on that. Because Chapter 152 brought in so many new revenues due to the gas tax and the new depreciation schedule of vehicle registrations, et cetera, we took the revenues that were based on those changes and called it the excess sum to the County State Aid Highway Fund and put a new formula on just that piece attributable to the new revenues that year. So that is more 40% based on share of vehicle registrations and 60% based on construction needs.
So, members, this is what we've referred to as the CASAW formula. It's the source of a lot of discussion in the legislature. And these two formulas are referred to what we call old money and new money. So that's kind of the shorthand. The old money, of course, is the grandfathered formula, and then the new money is revenue generated through the 2008 bill, mm-hmm. And is subject to the new formula.
Municipal state aid is much simpler. Thank goodness. They receive a smaller portion of the HUTDF revenues, about 8.5% of the total revenues to the fund. And they're distributed to cities only with a population over 5,000, of which there are 142 now, I believe, through a statutory formula. So this could be changed, but it has been this way for quite a long time. 50% based on each city's population and 50% based on their construction needs is calculated by MnDOT's Office of State Aid and the engineers, of course. Okay, so.
And members, we get into a really fun discussion when cities move in and out of a 5,000 count population in a given biennium. So
yes,
it's fun sorting that out.
And in fact, there was a policy change on that just last year, I believe, 2012, to help those cities that may have some road projects lined up and then suddenly their population drops below 5,000 and they're no longer receiving aid. Now they're sort of given a little phase-out period, about 4 or 5 years, I believe, until they're reassessed. So I'm going to skip this one slide for the moment and come back to it when I talk about transit. So I'm going to skip ahead to slide 19, the State Airports Fund. Just to show you another fund that we directly appropriate and deal with a lot in our budget jurisdiction. State Airports Fund also has dedicated user fees. They are also statutorily dedicated, not in the Constitution. They are aircraft registration tax, aviation fuel tax, and airflight property tax. Registration tax and aviation fuel tax, the amounts, the rates are listed in statute. The registration tax is 1% of their base value, and aviation fuel tax is 0.5 cent to 5 cent based upon use. So the more gas you buy, the less you pay for it for aviation fuel tax. And then the property tax is based on the assessed value of airline property, but also on revenue needs, judging by the program plan from the State Airports Fund. So that can be set to meet the needs of the program. In fiscal year 2012, as you can see, the airflight property tax brought in the biggest chunk of revenue there at $7.3 million, and the total to the airports fund was $18.5 million.
And we have a promise from Senator Rest to modernize this this fund.
We're going to do our best, Mr. Chairman. Senator Skoy and I are working with the interested parties.
And I think we'll bring that discussion here as well. So
absolutely, yes, indeed.
Right. Fantastic, thanks.
But the airports fund has been a favorite fund for people to raid.
And
yes, we'll
it
hear
is,
about the theft of $10 million from
there you
a few
go.
Years ago.
And it is, you know, the State Airports Fund is what supports the airports across Minnesota for their life safety projects and for making it safe to fly in and out of airports. And we don't just mean MSP, but across the state. And so we need to keep the integrity of that and also to support Minnesota businesses, because right now some of those taxes that are collected up there are they discourage Minnesota companies from particularly registering their planes in the state of Minnesota. So we're working on a proposal to make registering as well as flying in and out of here more business friendly.
Thank you.
I should just note just briefly that this appropriation is made in our biennial budget directly to MnDOT's Office of Aeronautics, and they have in their program, they make the grants to the different airports throughout the state. These are just a couple of catch-alls I just don't want to miss. Sorry. Here we go. Just a couple more pieces before I go back to transit. Transportation bonding, mostly an issue, I suspect, for the Capital Investment Committee, but we have in the past been asked to weigh in on trunk highway bonding proposals and make recommendations to Capital Investment Committee, and have also carried some trunk highway bonding amounts in our budget bills and other bills from time to time. Trunk highway bonds, the proceeds can only be used for trunk highway purposes, and they must be deposited in the trunk highway fund. And debt, so basically the bonding made out of the trunk highway fund must be used for trunk highway purposes and then are paid directly back into trunk highway. The MnDOT debt management guidelines were adopted quite a few years ago to sort of just get a handle on what debt service is being carried. And according to those, trunk highway fund debt service should not exceed 20% of annual state revenues. So that would be 20% of the revenues from the gas tax, the MVEST, and the registration tax to the highway user fund. General obligation bonds, again, generally carried through capital investment, but we do talk about them from time to time. They're used to fund any non-trunk highway transportation projects, such as transitways, commuter rail, local bridges and roads are a big topic in geo bonds, and sometimes buildings of one sort or another through MnDOT.
And members, just Senator Kiffmeyer.
Oh, when you're done, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I was just going to, as a point of information, I'm sorry if you mentioned it, Ms. Boyd, mm-hmm. but we have carried the trunk highway bonds in the transportation finance bill. Sometimes we carry them, sometimes they travel in the larger bonding bill. But the reason we can carry them in the transportation finance bill is because they don't require the three-fifths majority for passage. So it doesn't subject our finance bill to that higher threshold for passage. So we always get fairly strong support for our finance bills, and that's our goal this year, of course, right? And I just also wanted to mention that if there is a bonding bill this year, the GO bonds that are for transportation purposes, transit typically, are referred directly to the Capital Investment Committee, but we'll bring them into this committee for a hearing and discussion and recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. So we'll have the opportunity to take a look at all of those as well. Senator Kiffmeyer.
My question had to do with the 20% of annual state revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a dollar amount for what that would be at this time?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I can give you a schedule based on the last forecast. I can find it.
And members, the Transportation Fund's forecast briefing was held a few weeks ago, so there's a document that's fairly easily accessed, but if you like, I'll send a link around. Taking a note? All right, it's going to get done. So we'll send a link around to the Transportation Fund's forecast briefing document so you all can take a look at that. Ms. Boyd.
I can tell you that in fiscal year 12, the total debt service payable was about $80.5 million, and it's estimated to be about 7.5% of that limit. And the variance from 20% is $133.6 million. Obviously, this will increase in future years. I have a schedule that goes out to 2017, and in 2017, we'll be at about 17.6% of the limit. Beyond that, it's very hard to forecast, and I know that MnDOT is reluctant to put a number on that for obvious reasons, but if you'd like, I can pass the schedule on to you or the committee as a whole.
So the short version is there's a lot of capacity right now, but stuff that's coming online fairly quickly is going to get us pretty close to that 20% yeah. threshold. Probably the biggie is the Stillwater Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, and anyway, this is for you. How did we get a 20% guideline, and why is there a 20% guideline?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, MnDOT would have to answer that more fully, but that was a process under MnDOT. A lot of discussion went into that and making up a policy guideline to come up with that number. But I couldn't tell you where the number came from. I'm sorry. But
so, Senator Tomasoni, a couple of years ago, the legislature did direct MnDOT to establish mm-hmm. a guideline. If you remember, at one time, there was a proposal to do trunk highway bonding in amounts that would have consumed all of the trunk highway funds in out years, so we would have gone into the red. That was kind of a scary moment, but we avoided that. Actually MnDOT itself came forward and said, you know, we probably do need to establish some administrative guidelines, so that it's a number that was established internally to MnDOT, but they were required to establish some threshold in guidance by legislative direction.
So, Mr. Chairman, in reality, this is only a suggestion.
Correct. Yeah, it's not. The 20% is not in stone in statute. That's correct. It's internal to MnDOT. It's administrative. But it's based on prudent discussion and data analysis. Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, I'll just skip ahead then to. This is a very general overview of federal transportation funding. There's been a lot of changes recently as we shift from Safety Lou, the old authorization federal package, to MAP 21, and I understand that we'll probably have some briefings on that for the committee. So for now, this is just a very, very general overview. But just to show you that the Federal Aid Highway Program is a reimbursable program. Any outlays from the Trunk Highway Fund are from state sources and then are reimbursed as we submit bills for federally eligible projects to the feds and to FHWA. And those funds come right back into the Trunk Highway Fund, which is where the projects are funded from. Just to give you a picture of that, the federal revenues for fiscal year 12 were $394 million to the Trunk Highway Fund. Separate federal funding for non-road projects such as transit, rail, aeronautics, et cetera, those amounts are primarily deposited in the state's federal fund and are not generally appropriated by this committee. American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ERA, I still have this on there because there's still some outstanding projects. I just wanted to give a little snapshot of this as we continue on. This was obviously done a couple years ago, 2009. Over $500 million in highway and bridge funding came out of this program to Minnesota. That led to 225 state and local road projects put out to bid. 209 of those are completed, I believe, at this point. About $448.5 million of the total has been expended. Okay, so I'll go back to transit funding now. So the Transit Assistance Fund is another fund that receives dedicated funds, receives motor vehicle sales tax constitutionally dedicated, and motor vehicle lease sales tax statutorily dedicated to the fund. Broken down by 36% and 4% for Metro and Greater Minnesota. That's the MVEST piece. The Greater Minnesota Transit account also gets that lease sales tax piece that we talked about earlier, 50% of the remainder of the lease sales tax. Funds in the Transit Assistance Fund are statutorily appropriated to Met Council and to the Commissioner of Transportation, and in statute it's designated that they are to be used solely for transit purposes.
And Ms. Boyd, the is it $32 million that's taken off the top of the motor vehicle lease tax?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And
that is for a specific purpose, correct?
Mr. Chair, it's not specifically designated in statute. I believe that was fiscal year 10 that was changed. It originally was taken off the top for the lower income motor fuels tax credit, I believe, which was in existence for 1 year. So it was taken off the top to pay for the cost of that, to sort of make up for any hardship that was felt by people for the increased gas tax rate. That was in effect for 1 year. When that was repealed, the amount that was set aside to pay for that was kept in the general fund, not designated in statute, but the discussion at the time was that it would cover the cost of the angel investor tax credit that was enacted then.
Right. So so it's not specifically dedicated to that purpose.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
But the idea is it's in the general fund, and the amount that the angel investor tax credit costs is about that much. Is that the rationale?
Mr. Chair, I believe it was projected to cost around that amount. I don't have the exact numbers. It was also to keep it at the amount that was already set aside. Whether that covered the cost of the angel investor tax credit, I couldn't tell you at this point.
Okay. Thank you. We'll try to figure that out. Thanks. Well, members, we'll try to figure that out. This is source of a lot of conversation, let's say.
So, Transit Assistance Fund is one piece of state appropriations to transit programs. The other piece is general fund direct appropriation. And I'll skip ahead to Metro Transit, which is slide 22. This is a snapshot of their 2011 operating budget as adopted by Met Council. I'm sure there have been some slight changes and adjustments since then, but just to give you an overall picture of it. The other thing worth noting is that the transit programs operate on a calendar year basis, so this is a calendar year budget. But as you can see on the left, just to break down the revenues, the biggest piece of the revenues, now this is the whole of Metro Transit, these aren't just state revenues, the biggest piece is MVEST, the statutory appropriation of MVEST from the state. Second biggest piece, 26% in that year, were projected to be fare revenue. 15% general fund direct appropriation. Federal funds are another 9%, and other investment income, contract services, things like that, another 7%.
Ms. Boyd, so with the 7%, the capital dollars that are levied on the property tax in the metro area or in the transit taxing district, that fall into the 7%?
Mr. Chair, no, this is just the operating budget.
Oh, the operating budget, excuse me.
Is separate, yes.
Sorry, thank you.
Yeah, the Met Council does have the ability to levy to pay for the capital costs of the transit program as well. So I don't have anything included about the capital budget here, but I can certainly provide information at some point if we wanted to.
That would be useful, so okay. Thanks.
And then just a breakdown of spending, just so we can see the bulk of where the funds go. The vast majority in the program, 71%, are for the bus program, regular route bus program. 11%, the next piece, is for Metro Mobility, which is the dial ride service. Light rail is 7%. Planning is a small piece at 1%, and that's planning for the entire region's transportation needs. Suburban transit, the opt-outs of the regular route service, that's another 6%, and that is all motor vehicle sales tax money that flows through to the suburban transit providers. And North Star operation costs are another 4% of that piece. Just a few notes, on Metropolitan Transit funding. Again, the two state funding sources are MVEST, statutorily appropriated, and general fund, directly appropriated in our budget bill. And as of last year, they're fully phased in to getting 36% of MVEST revenues, so it'll be 36% here on in until it's changed, or if it's changed statutorily. This has been historically true since I've been here, and I actually don't know if this is still true, so maybe someone can tell me if I'm wrong, but due to the volatility of MVEST revenues, especially in the last several years, during and before the phase-in, Metro Transit was budgeting at 95% of forecasted MVEST to leave a little piece for that volatility in fulfilling their program.
Members, I'll note for the record, Judge Chetnan from Metro Transit is nodding his head vigorously. Yes, they do still budget only 95% of forecasted revenues for motor vehicle sales tax. It has been very volatile, even more volatile than that in the past. So even that's been that even that budgeting technique has exposed them to some significant risk.
And just to give you a sense of scope here, in the last biennium, or the current biennium, I should say, fiscal year 12 and 13, the appropriations from the general fund directly to Met Council for Transit are $78.1 million. This was quite a cut, 35% decrease from the previous biennium as part of the deficit reduction decisions that happened in the special session of 11. Yes, 11. And then just I'm just showing you that the transit in the seven-county metropolitan area is provided by the Metropolitan Council through these main two programs, Metro Transit, Metro Mobility. Metro Transit is bus and light rail. And by several suburban transit providers, the opt-outs. And again, they receive some MVEST from the state flowing through Met Council. The Greater Minnesota Transit is operated by MnDOT's Office of Transit. They have about a $53 million. Again, calendar year budget for this, the last year we have is calendar year 11 that I had info on. And the breakdown, again, of revenues, the largest piece is, again, MVEST, 39%. About the same general fund, 21%, and federal monies, 22%. And then the local shares are about 18%. And then spending, these are designations that are defined in statute, and they have to do with the populations of the areas in which the transit providers are serving. So again, as I said, these are in statute. So rural is the bulk of the providers, 47%, and that is population centers less than 2,500. Small urban is 2,500 to 50,000. And that would be the 8% piece of spending. Urbanized is greater than 50,000, the 39% of spending. It does not include elderly and disabled. Elderly and disabled is a separate program category, and that is 6% of the spending from Greater Minnesota Transit programs. Okay. I believe I've said ad nauseum everything on this slide, so I'll just point out that they are locally run transit services that just receive funding and state and federal assistance and also program assistance somewhat through MnDOT's Office of Transit, but they are not run by MnDOT. And now we have two slides. Chris Turner can join me for the second half of this. These are traditionally what the Transportation Committee has had in its budget jurisdiction under the Department of Public Safety. These are very clearly transportation-related programs. This year in our budget jurisdiction, this biennium, I should say, we have picked up basically the rest of the Department of Public Safety. And Chris Turner is going to speak to those in just a minute.
And members, another document in your packet is a listing of the jurisdiction of the committee. Both from program areas as well as the funds that we'll be carrying in our finance bill.
So, Mr. Chair, these programs are in Department of Public Safety, transportation-related driver and vehicle services. This is a fee-based operations budget. They have two operating accounts in the Special Revenue Fund, which are the Vehicle Services Operating Account and the Driver Services Operating Account. These are fees collected on all transactions for, you know, titles and renewals and driver's licenses, and collect in these accounts, and then are directly appropriated back to the department by the legislature. State Patrol is funded primarily from the Trunk Highway Fund. A piece of State Patrol capital security is funded from the general fund since it's not highway purpose. And the Vehicle Crimes Unit is the newest piece of State Patrol. It was created in 2010 to investigate crimes of registration taxes and things like that. It's funded from the Highway User Tax Fund directly because if any funds are collected from these investigations, they would flow back into the Highway User Tax and go out through the constitutional dedication to the other funds.
And, Ms. Boyd, the hope is that this more than pays for itself.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's my understanding. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any idea if it is doing so yet?
Mr. Chair, I do not, but that would be a great update from the department.
All right, thank you.
Office of Traffic Safety is funded through some special revenue and a very small trunk highway appropriation, about $435,000 a year, which is a required match for federal funding, which is, I don't have a number in front of me, but is much larger than that. It's just a small required match. Traffic safety is mostly funded through federal revenues. And then pipeline safety, although we do directly appropriate it in our budget bill, is again funded strictly through safety inspection fees and some federal grant money. If there are no questions on that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Chris Turner. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Judiciary Committee. The reason I'm here today, as was mentioned, is because there are six divisions in the Department of Public Safety that have historically been funded by the Judiciary Committee that are now under your jurisdiction. I'll be tracking those six accounts for you through the session, and I'll go over them quickly here. The six divisions are the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the State Fire Marshal, Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement, Office of Justice Programs, and the Emergency Communications Networks. Of the six, the Fire Marshal and the Emergency Communication Networks are special revenue accounts, and the other four divisions are general fund accounts. I'll do a quick description of the six divisions. The first is Homeland Security and Emergency Management. They administer state and federal disaster assistance, usually on a 3-to-1 federal-state match formula. In addition, the division plans responses to various emergencies ranging from a nuclear power plant incident to emergencies involving hazardous materials or chemical accidents. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, or the BCA, provides four criminal justice services: criminal investigation, criminal forensics, criminal history, and police training and development. The BCA has a criminal investigation unit that consists of 58 agents and 11 field offices. They generally handle complex or multi-jurisdictional felonies in partnership with outstate law enforcement. The BCA provides forensic science lab services to the main office at the main office in St. Paul, and it also has a satellite lab up in Bemidji. It houses MINJIS, which is the Minnesota Criminal Justice Information System, which provides criminal histories for law enforcement, the judicial system, and employee background checks. And finally, the BCA provides police training, education, and professional development for local law enforcement statewide. The vast majority of BCA's funding is general fund, but I'd just like to point out that it does receive a trunk highway fund appropriation of approximately $2 million each year for state patrol DWI lab costs. The next division is the State Fire Marshal, which is a special revenue account. It is funded by a 0.65% surcharge on premiums for homeowners insurance and commercial fire policies. This raises approximately $13 million annually. The surcharge funds the Fire Marshal's office itself, which provides fire inspection and investigation services. In addition, the surcharge funds hazardous material and chemical assessment team reimbursements and firefighter training and education statewide. The Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement Division licenses alcohol and gambling activities around the state. It conducts background checks and criminal investigations when required. The Office of Justice Program handles state and federal victim assistance and community justice grants. There are four main types of grants: crime victim reparations, which is direct monetary assistance for crime victims; crime victim assistance grants, which could include temporary housing, counseling, crime victim notification services. The largest grant in the Office of Justice Programs is the Battered Women's Shelter and Services grants, and they are made statewide. And finally, we have the law enforcement and community grants, which include both law enforcement grants to, like, the gang strike force, and community crime prevention grants. And finally, the Department of Public Safety houses the emergency communication networks. That is a special revenue account which funds the 911 and Armor statewide public safety radio programs. You're probably familiar. You have a monthly 80 cent per phone line charge on your phone bill, which raises approximately $70 million annually for these programs. And those, Mr. Chairman, are the six divisions that I'll be tracking for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Any questions, members? Senator Thomason.
Mr. Chairman, Chris, is that 50 cents that we pay on our auto insurance policy to make sure people don't steal our car, is that in one of these?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the auto theft prevention program is not included in the Department of Public Safety. I believe that's run by the Department of Commerce now.
Okay. All right. So that's in my division.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And I'm on your division there, so we'll talk about that there. Any questions, committee, for either Ms. Boyd or Mr. Turner? Senator Carlson.
Ms. Boyd, there's a question that I've gotten a couple of times about the freeze on MVEST for the local for local transit operations. Can you explain that for me?
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I may have to refresh my memory of that and get back to you, but as part of the budget bill that was done in special session in fiscal year and in 2011, there was a temporary decrease, and I apologize, but I am struggling to remember the details of it. I may have to get back to you. But part of the deal was for the 2 years to temporarily decrease the amount of MVEST that flowed through to the suburban transit providers. And I really think I'm going to have to get back to you in more details. But I'd be happy to provide them with the committee as a whole. So,
thank you. Any other questions, members? Senator Wieger, you missed our show and tell. So
part of it.
So it's your turn. You could introduce yourself and tell us a little transportation story from your past or present or future.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, my name's Chuck Wieger. My district is 43 Maplewood, North St. Paul, Oakdale, Matamidi, Willerney, Birchwood area, and I'm in my 17th year and previously served on transportation. They often say that school funding formula is complex, and so is this. And I look forward to the challenge that we all share. I have a lot of different interests in transportation, as we all do for our own districts, but just going down memory lane, some of my best experiences would be going with my grandparents on the train to California every summer growing up and remembering all those stops along the way. And maybe a second one would be going on the Alacan Highway, which, as you know, some of our transportation systems are on the ocean. Or if you're in Washington, going up to Alaska and how different states have different challenges. And maybe we'll reflect on some of those things in the future.
Great. Thank you. So, members, this is great. It's we have almost an hour left over of committee, so we get to go play and do our own thing now. Just let me say a couple more things. It's in your committee procedures, but I'll just call your attention to it. There's a save folder in your envelope here. So anything you want to save for future reference, just stick it in there, and we won't throw it away. Everything else we will throw away. We'll recycle. So be sure to hang on to stuff if you want it there. We also will keep official committee files, so if you get frantically desperate for something that you knew you saw in committee at one point or another, ask Ted or Michael for another copy of that. On Wednesday, we're going to have MnDOT to put a little more flesh on the bones of the presentation today. So if any questions occur to you between now and then, be sure to bring those up on Wednesday. Let me just once again invite you to stay in close contact with Michael and Ted. If you need anything, I have an open door policy as well. Feel free to call upon me anytime. And let me emphasize that we have outstanding committee staff and our nonpartisan staff, Bonnie, Krista, Chris, and Ken are outstanding, really excellent. If you have anything you want to know legislative history on or a problem that you want to try to solve or legislation you're trying to write, they've been at it for a long time, and they're outstanding. We have a lot of folks out in the audience here from the agencies and from the various stakeholders and advocacy organizations. I'm guessing you've met them or will soon, but a lot of good folks. We're going to have a lot of fun this year, so I appreciate your attention and your time. Anything else? Anything further? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Good luck, Jordan. See you later.
Yeah. See ya.